Staff ready? Okay, there we go. All right, everybody, I'm going to call this meeting to order. This is the April 7, 2021 meeting of the Chelan County Hearing Examiner. My name is Andy Kottkamp, and I've been appointed by the Chelan County Board of Commissioners to serve as the Land Use Hearing Examiner. My job is to render decisions on various applications that are authorized to come before me, which include a variety of variances and development permits and subdivisions. That's what we have on the agenda for today. Now, I consider any testimony and evidence presented at today's hearing, as well as all the written materials that are already on file, in order to make my decision. Now, although the hearing process does have certain rules, I still try to conduct these meetings in a relaxed and informal manner. But we still have a process that we're going to use. Obviously, we'll take each item separately. For each item, staff will present their report to make whatever recommendations that they wish to make. Then the applicant or the applicant's representative is given an opportunity to testify. The applicant does have the burden of proof to show compliance with all the applicable rules and regulations. We'll then turn this over to the public, and the public will be given an opportunity to present their testimony and evidence. This is not a question and answer period. This is a time for you to present your testimony as to why the project does or does not comply with the applicable rules and regulations. And then, because the applicant has the burden of proof, if the applicant wishes to submit any rebuttal testimony, they'll be given that chance to do so. Now, if you are going to testify, what I'm going to have you do is state your name and address. I'll then swear you in as a witness. I'd ask that you keep your testimony relevant to the application that we're talking about and not to other issues beyond the scope of the proposal. And if you have anything in writing that you want to submit today, we can make those arrangements. Now, I have the option following this hearing to keep the record open if I think there's a need for additional written testimony to be submitted. But in any event, my written decision will be made within 10 working days after I close the public record. Now, except as provided by the Chelan County Code regarding requests to reopen a hearing and requests for reconsideration, my decision on each of these matters will be final and conclusive, except for the development permit application. That one's a recommendation to the county commissioners. But for the other two items, my decision is final and conclusive, and except that they may be appealed, and those appeals would be by means of what's called a land use petition action, and those appeals have to be filed within 21 days of the date of the issuance of my decision. And if the appeal isn't timely filed, the appeal would be barred. Now, I've reviewed all the items on today's agenda. I don't have any interest in the properties or the proposals to be heard today, and I'll be able to fairly and objectively consider each item. And outside of receiving and reviewing the staff report for each item, along with all the attachments to the staff report, which included, again, the application materials, all the comments that have come through, agency and public, all the site plan drawings, the noticing documents, there's photographs on some of the items. Other than receiving and reviewing the entire planning staff file, I've not had any communication regarding any of the items that are on today's agenda. So with those representations, if there is anybody here today who objects to my participation as the hearing examiner for either item or for any item, then you need to come forward and state so at this time. Okay, hearing none, we'll turn to the first item on today's agenda. This is the development agreement request given application number SP20-011. This is a development agreement for Leonard and Kelly Silva to defer frontage improvements on number one Canyon Road as required in the conditions of approval of the short plat authorization of SP20-011. Now, for the record, I will admit into the record let me get everything up here. All of the application materials, there's a complete development agreement that's been provided. There were no comments on this matter. I will admit there's a staff report for the short plat and the decision on the short plat. I'll admit all those items. Indeed, I will admit the entire planning staff file into the record at this time by this reference. And is there somebody here from Public Works that wishes to speak on this?
There's not.
All right. Public Works is not here. Is the applicant here?
Yes.
Yes, we're here.
All right. Great. I'll just have one question for one of you. So one of you needs to raise your right hand and be sworn in as a witness. Who's that going to be?
Hey, Leonard.
All right. Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
I do.
All right. Thank you very much. And could you state your full name again for the record?
Leonard Daniel Silva, 2700 Number One Canyon.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Silva. Now you have, you're the applicant in this matter, correct?
Yes.
And you have you seen the development agreement that's proposed to go to the county commissioners?
Yes, we have.
And do you have any objection with any of the components of that development agreement?
I do not.
Okay. Is there anything that you would like to tell me about this, other than what's stated in the development agreement and the short plat approval?
No, I think it's all covered.
Terrific. So do I. All right. Is there any member of the public that came to testify on this matter? All right. Then what I'm going to do, Mr. Silva, is I'm going to, Mr. and Mrs. Silva, I'm going to close the record at this time on this matter. What I do is I make a recommendation, recommended decision to the county commissioners, and that'll go off to them, and then it'll be heard by them in one of their upcoming meetings. So just in that, that decision may be appealable, but my decision is not, because it's just a recommendation. All right, thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you.
All right, the next item on today's agenda, this is a series of applications, wetland variance given application number WV20-003 and two zoning variances given application numbers VAR20-002 and VAR20-003. These are applications for the variety of requested variances from the wetland buffer and from setbacks in order to construct a proposed residence and detached garage. So for the record, I'm going to admit into the record at this time by this reference, the staff report that was submitted. All of those attachments to the staff report, which included all of the application materials. There are expert witness reports, narrative reports from the applicants. There are public comments that have been submitted. There's agency comments, noticing documents. There have been correspondence between the parties. This matter kind of goes back to 2016, but this is a brand new application. There's, again, expert witness reports that have been submitted. I'm going to admit all those items. Indeed, I will admit the entire planning staff file into the record at this time by this reference, and I'll turn this matter over to Mr. White for the staff presentation.
Thank you, Andy. So this the subject property is intersected by Brender Creek and unnamed tributary, which are both F-type streams and have a buffer of 150 feet. There's also a Category 1 slope wetland, which has a protective buffer of 200 feet. So the applicants are requesting a variance to reduce the wetland buffer from 200 feet to a minimum of 5 feet. They are also requesting a variance to reduce the front yard from 55 feet from the center of Brender Canyon Road to 35 feet from the center of Brender Canyon Road. And also they are requesting a variance to reduce the agricultural setback from 100 feet to 24 feet on the western boundary, and from 100 feet to 65 feet on the northern property boundary. These variances are they're requesting these variances in order to create a building envelope for future construction of a single family residence and detached garage, which has been sited in a location on the property that minimizes impacts to the wetland. To offset the impacts to the wetland buffer, the applicant has submitted a revised habitat management and mitigation plan for the installation of roughly 2,898 square feet of native vegetation plantings within the buffer in the wetland area, which corresponds to an approximate 1.5:1 mitigation ratio. The subject property was created in 1952 when Brender Canyon Road was put in through the property and memorialized through a certificate of exemption in 2005. A subsequent BLA enlarged the property from 1.5 to 2.5 acres in size to optimize future residential construction. A building permit was submitted in 2017 for the construction of a single family residence, but this permit was revoked when it was discovered that the wetlands were present on the site. Just also FYI, the wetlands do not show up on the NWI mapping or county mapping. And because of the disturbance to these wetlands, the code enforcement case was opened at that time as well. These code enforcement issues were resolved in 2019 through the restoration of the wetland per an approved mitigation plan. The wetland restoration that was previously done is not included in the habitat management and mitigation plan. And the nearest, it should also be noted that the nearest agricultural use of surrounding properties is roughly 250 feet from the proposed or from the property lines as well. Based on the application materials submitted and the revised mitigation plan, the county is recommending approval for all three of the variances.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. White. Is the applicant ready to proceed?
Yes.
All right, sir, can you state your name and an address for the record?
Ryan Walker, 151 South Wortham Street, Suite 101, Wenatchee.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Walker.
Good morning.
Would you raise your right hand for me? Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
Yes, I do.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Walker, you are here as an agent authorized to appear and speak on behalf of the applicant and property owner today. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And what would you like to tell me about this project?
Okay, the applicant is also here if necessary, just so you know if you have any questions of them. So this is an application by Jim Williams for three variances to build a single family residence and a garage on his property outside of Cashmere, as detailed in the staff report. Williams acquired the property in July 9th of 1999 and owned the property for a period of time. And then in August 30 of 2006, he sold this property to W.D. Jackson. Jackson desired to build a residence on this property and engaged contractors and architects and began working on a building permit. And you know, during the course of that, a stream typing was conducted to evaluate one of the streams on the property. So there's Brender Creek on the east side of the property, and then there was another map stream. So on October 28th of 2016, Washington Department of Natural Resources, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, and Chelan County officials met on the property. And Department of Natural Resources concluded that other stream does not exist. And they submitted one of their reports to verify that. So there were three government officials out on the property that day, and no one brought up anything about a wetland being present. So ultimately, Jackson was issued a building permit in 2017, building permit 170201, and they began excavation for the foundation. Sometime during that point, Jackson was notified by the county there may be a wetland on the property. At that point, the county directed him to hire a qualified professional and have a report done. Either there's a wetland or there's not, but you need to figure this out. So on July 8th of 2017, I personally visited the property and confirmed the presence of a wetland on the property. So at that time, the wetland was not delineated. There was no category rating done. It was just a verbal confirmation to Jackson that yes, there is a wetland here you're not going to be able to build where you have a building permit to build. And ultimately that building permit was then rescinded by Chelan County based on that information and phone calls. And there was probably some emails also in there. So following up that fall on September 13th of 2017, Willems reacquired the property from Jackson for the same price as he sold it to him, to be a good neighbor. And he thought to treat Jackson fairly based on unknown conditions on the property. He could have offered less or not taken the property back, but he just chose to be a good person and reacquire the property. So then comes February of 2018, a mitigation plan was prepared to address the damage to the wetland done during construction. Now, the interesting thing about the mitigation plan is this was prepared by Chelan County Natural Resources, which would be unusual. Typically, you have to hire a private company to do work like this. But what was going on is the county was taking some responsibility for issuing a permit where there was a wetland that clearly no one knew that it existed. Property was visited by multiple government officials. No one brought this up. No one knew it was there. And the county is trying to help fix the problem. So some time goes by, and ultimately I was then hired by Jim Willems to actually complete a wetland delineation. So on August 20 of 2019, that work was completed by one of my employees, and the report was finalized in October of 2019, and we provided that to Jim Willems. So part of a wetland delineation is finding the exact boundary of the wetland. Until that occurs, you know, no one knows exactly where the edge of the wetland is. By 2017, I had confirmed, yes, there is one on the property, but until you go collect data and find the exact edge of the wetland, it's not known where that is. And then likewise, a category rating was completed, and wetlands fall into one of four categories. And depending on the category, that dictates the buffer size. Higher rating wetlands have a bigger buffer, lower rating wetlands have a smaller buffer. Until the rating is done, the buffer is unknown. So it was not until late in 2019 that any extent of the hardship on this property was actually known. So what we end up with here is it's a 2.5 acre property, almost the size of 3 football fields, and it is completely unbuildable without all of these variances. On the entire property, there is no area outside of the buffers and setbacks. They all overlap. There's not one square foot of usable area. So all of the three variances in the code, they have the criteria is the same. So I'm going to address that together and go through that quickly with you here. I know it's more detailed in the application. I'm going to hit a few high points here, and then I'll be ready to answer any questions that you have. But all of these variances are completely necessary for the preservation of a property right for the applicant, the same as possessed by owners in the neighborhood and the zoning district. This would not be a grant of a special privilege. The application is to build a modest residence and garage. Without these, no development of the property is allowed whatsoever. And this is due to unique circumstances of the property. Large wetland that no one knew about. Brinder Creek is nearby, agricultural zoning. None of this does the applicant have any control over. These are natural features and codes, which they they cannot control. And this, the hardship is not the result of the owner's actions. It's a result of the physical constraints of the parcel and the strict application of the code, which limits development from the front yard setback of 55 feet from the center line, and development within 100 feet of commercial ag zoned property. If he was to meet these setbacks, he would be forced to build in the wetland, which is not allowed. And that is not something you can qualify for a variance for. So these factors, the applicant has no control over whatsoever. They haven't caused the wetland buffer to be that size. They haven't caused the road. They haven't caused the agricultural setbacks. This variance will not be detrimental to the public welfare, safety, or injure the property in the neighborhood. The proposed residence will still be located 54 feet from the center line of Brender Canyon Road, 24 feet from the shared property line with the commercial ag property. The garage will be 35 feet from the center line and 65 feet from the commercial ag area. So they won't pose any threat to navigation of the road by residential or commercial vehicles. The county road ends immediately adjacent to this property. So there's not traffic going past it. It's not a high speed county road. It dead ends right there, and the snow plows will pile snow there. There's a existing non-conforming historic packing shed located also on the property at the end of the road. So this packing shed actually extends into the right of way. The shed was built before the county acquired the road. When they acquired right of way, somehow it went through the shed, but the shed has been there for a very long time. I don't know how long. But it is closer than the proposed structures will be. So any impact to the front yard setback exists because of this legal non-conforming structure.
What's the plan with that structure? Is it going to be removed?
As far as I know, it will stay there. It's a historic structure. I think very desirable to keep there. There, obviously, you have the county right of way, and I think maybe there's a discussion to be had with Public Works, but as of now, it's not. There's no plan to remove it that I'm aware of.
If it were removed, would that impact your variance analysis at all?
Well, all three variances would be required still. You could not meet the setbacks. If it wasn't there, it would make the building area larger. I haven't really analyzed that, but definitely I'm sure you've seen on the site plan, it's a very small constrained area we're trying to fit into. And, part of that is the existing structure that is being worked around.
So my concern, I guess my thought about this is that he gets this variance, the building is already there, I can't do anything about that, and I still need all these variances. And then if these variances are approved, then he knocks down the building and says, okay, now I can build a larger building. I'm going to change my plans, so to speak. So you said the applicant's here. I'd certainly like to hear from them if they're willing to discuss, make some representation that building is not going to be removed, and then that could become a condition of approval if this is going to be approved.
So, okay. Do you want to hear from him now?
Yeah, since we're talking about this now.
Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, my name is James Willems, and I reside in Brender Canyon. We own the packing shed and property.
All right, I need to put you under oath, sir. Would you raise your right hand for me?
Sure.
Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
I will, sir.
All right. Thank you very much. And Mr. Wilms, you're the property owner and the applicant in this matter?
Yes, my wife and I are, yes.
All right. Thank you. The question that I had is this packing shed, I just don't want, I want to make it very clear whether or not that shed's going to be removed or whether it's not going to be removed, because to me, it has an impact on what your plans are. So as I indicated with in my discussion with Mr. Walker, it would be a bit disingenuous to say, I can't build any closer. I have to build right here because there's a packing shed and there's all the variances I need. And then if the project is approved, the variances are approved, then you knock down the shed. You say, oh, well, wait a minute. Now we're going to build in a different spot, a little bit bigger. And so what's the plan with that packing shed?
Our discussions, my wife and I's attestation, have been that we're going to keep that packing shed. It's probably over 100, 110 years old. It has some wonderful wood in it. It's just a beautiful old building. No, we have no plans at all on getting rid of it. Our desire would be to keep it and to build with it still there.
All right.
Could I offer up, and I'm going to speak a little bit for Jim, so let me know if you're not in agreement with this, but I think a condition of approval stating that no future variances to build in the area of the packing shed are allowed, even if it fell down or burnt down or whatever like that. I think that's a reasonable condition of approval.
I think that would be agreeable. Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Wilms. Mr. Walker, I'm sorry to interrupt, but please continue.
Sure. Continuing on, the hardships we've discussed are a direct result of the application of the zoning code, and they're not based on illegal or non-conforming circumstances. And regardless of the presence of the shed, three variances are needed to do anything on this property, any reasonable use whatsoever. It's the hardships are the physical constraints and the application of the code. Variance is not based on a lack of economic return. As I keep pointing out, it's a fact the property is not buildable without the approval of the variances, and it's not based on the proposed structure being too small. I'm sure you've seen it, the site plan, even the building area we are proposing is what I think most would call very small and slightly irregular in shape. It even with approval of the variances, this is a challenging property. It's not a variance trying to push the limit and get anything larger than a very modest building area. And the variance is not based on the fact that the hardship existed when the applicant acquired the property. It's based on the fact that it exists now. Again, it is a undisputable fact the property is not buildable without approval of the variances, no matter who owns it. The criteria in the code uses the term should here or there in describing what needs to be met for approval. And so this language does not outright prohibit the granting of variances. I think it gives the hearing examiner discretion in unique circumstances to grant relief from hardships imposed by the code. And that's what we have here. And along those lines, hardships are not static over time. Codes change and the environment changes. For example, it is for this reason that Chelan County and the state of Washington require wetland reports to be updated every 5 years. Wetlands can change. They get bigger. They get smaller. They dry up. These things are dynamic. Streams can move. Land erodes or land accretes. the constantly changing environment. This particular wetland is influenced by irrigation water. If uphill irrigation practices change, the wetland could get smaller as orchards are removed. Another example of this is Shawnee County is about to adopt new wetland regulations that'll probably be in effect by about May of this year. So under the future regulations, the buffer of this wetland will actually be reduced by 90 feet. Now, although a variance will still be required due to the extreme hardship, this is just one more example of the transient nature of the environment and land use regulations. So it makes it very difficult to determine what conditions may have existed at any previous point in time. So no matter who owns the property, it has no reasonable use unless the variances are granted. So with that, I'd be interested to answer any questions you have.
I suppose the only other big question that I have is that there's a recent comment from, I believe it was the Department of Ecology, after they saw the revised report, still had a comment. I'm trying to see if I can find it here. And this is from March 23rd, 2021, from a Lori White with Ecology. Have you had a chance to review that letter?
You know, I have, and it is a little bit confusing because it's the same comment that we responded to with the revised mitigation plan. And I see Lori's not here, but Amanda from Fish and Wildlife is. She, I'm sure will weigh in on this, but you know, the mitigation plan provides more mitigation than is required by the code or the ecology guidance. Ecology guidance is clear on one-to-one mitigation for buffer impacts. We've, based on comments and discussion with Lori, have provided 1.5-to-1 on this project. So that the normally when we had resubmitted the mitigation plan, I would expect a different comment back. And in fact, another project coming up, I'm sure you're aware of, we did receive a response like that. So I'm a little bit confused myself, but again, we're committed to verifying the mitigation plan, is acceptable. I believe it is, but if a condition of approval will help to satisfy that, I think that's very reasonable.
Well, I'm just looking, I mean, do you agree that the guidance cited in this letter says that it requires a 20-to-1 enhancement for a category one forested wetland, but they're recommending a 10-to-1 enhancement. Is it possible to do a 10-to-1 enhancement on this property?
Well, while it may be possible, I don't agree with that. And again, we have resolved this with Ecology on a parallel project, which is not this one. And those mitigation ratios are for wetland impacts. So the 20-to-1 is when you impact a wetland, not a wetland buffer. And when you are impacting a wetland buffer, you aren't using the wetland mitigation ratios. And we've received concurrence from Ecology on another project. And so I believe the 1.5-to-1 absolutely meets the Ecology guidance.
So, Andy, we have Amanda here from DFW who has something that she wants to say as well.
I'll get to her when the applicant finishes. I'll call on her next and then give the applicant at the end of everything and an opportunity to submit whatever rebuttal that they would like to state about that. That was my question, Mr. Have you had a chance to look at the proposed conditions?
I have, yes.
Any objection with any of those?
None whatsoever.
All right, anything else you'd like to add on behalf of the applicant?
Not at this time.
All right, so we'll turn it over basically to the public at this time, and I understand Ms. Berg, you have something that you want to say, so we'll start with you. Can you state your full name for the record?
My full name is Amanda Barge, and I work for the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife.
All right, would you raise your right hand for me? Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
I do.
All right, thank you very much. And you are speaking today on behalf of Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife?
I am.
Okay, what would you like to tell me about this?
So the department recognizes the hardship that the applicant faces here, and you know the history of the project. Ryan's provided a very complete review. The concern that the department shares, along with the Department of Ecology, Lori White, is due to the significant buffer reduction. Our goal is to try to avoid direct impacts to the wetland. So the comment that both WDFW and Ecology share at this point is, as part of the condition of approval, we'd like to make sure that the remainder of the buffer, the 5 feet that's proposed, is well vegetated to make sure to avoid direct impacts to the wetland to ensure no net loss. That's, I think, the only outstanding issue from the revised habitat management and mitigation plan that we see. We greatly appreciate, you know, the enhancement that's been proposed by Gretti and Associates, and going above the minimum standard. But, you know, with a significant buffer reduction like this one, due to the hardship that the applicant faces, we really just want to ensure that, you know, the remainder of the buffer is in a state where it will offer that protection from direct impact, especially prior to construction. And Ryan, I hope that maybe helps clarify Lori's. Lori had a site visit today, so otherwise she would have liked to be here as well. The scheduling just didn't allow for that.
Yeah, I think that is what I was trying to articulate. If I didn't go into the exact location of the plantings, but I think we're all in agreement on the ratio, and I do agree to the location.
All right, thank you. Anything else, Ms. Barge?
That's it. That's our main comment.
All right, thank you very much. We'll open this up for the remainder of the public. Is there anybody else from the public that wishes to testify on this matter? Yeah, Ms. Norton, you can unmute yourself.
Thank you.
State your name and address for me, please.
Julie Norton, attorney at Ogden Murphy Wallace. Address is 1 5th Street, Suite 200, Wenatchee, Washington.
And who is your client in this matter?
My clients are Julie and Ludger Smania.
All right. Will you be offering any testimony or argument regarding the evidence that's already in the record?
Mostly argument, but you might swear me in anyway.
Sure, just in case. Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
I do.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And what would you like to tell me?
So I'll try and be brief, but for a variety of reasons, we believe this wetland variance should be denied for failure to meet the code requirements, both the general variance code requirements and the wetland variance code requirements. I know the applicant's agent indicated that the criteria was not mandatory. However, there are very clear standards that must be met and trump any discretionary standards. So for example, section 1195.020 of the code, which pertains to the general variance, provides that no variance shall be granted unless it can be shown that all of the following conditions can be met. And then there's A through E subparts that I won't read, but I will go through each element as to why they are not met. And these are the shall be met criteria. In this case, the applicant fails subpart A. The variance is not required to enjoy a common right to other properties. The other properties in the area are 10-acre parcels zoned AC, many of them with active agricultural uses, vineyards, horses, those types of uses. They are also used as primary residences for the owners. In this particular case, the applicant has a primary residence just down the street that is compliant with the AC10 designations. So the applicant's sole purpose for constructing this particular residence is for income purposes. And all other homes in this area are used, like I said, for primary residence. So keeping the property intact is actually more consistent with the other properties in the zone. This would essentially convert an AC property into a single family residential. Subpart B of the same code is not met. The applicant had control over the lot size. The applicant created the non-conforming lot or the condition requiring the variance. The lot was created by the certificate of exemption in 2005. However, the applicant subsequently performed a boundary line adjustment that was completed in 2006, which could have incorporated and made this a compliant lot. In fact, he expanded the lot to a further non-conforming lot when he could have attached it to any of the other 10-acre parcels as part of this boundary line adjustment to make it a conforming lot. We suspect that the wetland condition was known, and that's probably why it wasn't added to these other 10-acre lots. So he had control over the disposition of the property at that time after the certificate of exemption. Subpart B of 1195-020 is not met. The hardship is the result of the applicant's own actions, sort of what I just described. He did a subsequent boundary line adjustment that could have resolved some of these issues, either adding it to a compliant parcel across the street, but he had that control at the time. Subpart D is also not met. And in addition, 1180-120 related to the wetland variances is not met. The variance requested is unreasonable and detrimental to the public welfare. They've also not demonstrated it's the minimum necessary to achieve what they want to accomplish. I think you touched on this a little bit. They're not proposing a reduction of a setback. They're proposing a complete elimination from 200 feet down to less than 5. That's a 98% variance just of the wetlands, not even taking into account the three other variances on the property. There's no evidence that it's the minimum necessary. As you mentioned, they haven't explored other footprints, removing the packing shed. We understand it's a historic relic, but it's, as far as we know, not historically designated. Now, I'm not saying anyone in that area wants it destroyed, but it admittedly on the record was not looked at as an option to further reduce the plight of this applicant and create a different building envelope. The property could be used for storage or other open space uses. It doesn't have to be used for residential. In Mico v. Pacific County, 197 Winap 1041, a 2017 Division II Court of Appeals case, the Court of Appeals upheld the hearing examiner's denial of a wetland variance for failure to provide evidence that it was the minimum necessary to enable the applicant to use the property. So again, that was the hearing examiner denying the application based on the fact that they hadn't submitted sufficient evidence that it was the minimum necessary to avoid impacts to the wetlands. And that was upheld by the Court of Appeals. Granting the variance also violates the should provisions that I think the applicant was referring to. The granting of the variance should not do these other five things. And in this case, it would violate some of those more discretionary standards. As previously mentioned, a variance should not be based on lack of reasonable economic return. Well, this is for an income property. Therefore, granting the variance would be based on lack of economic return. Granting the variance would also be due to conditions that existed at the time the applicant acquired the property. You know, as mentioned in the comments, the applicant not only created the lot, but he then sold the property to another third party. He then repurchased the property in 2017. The property existed in this condition in at least 2005 or 2006 after the boundary line adjustment was completed. So he has, with knowledge, repurchased the property. Even the applicant said, I didn't have to rebuy this, but I did. So he came to that, which is an outright prohibition in section 0203. And then finally, due to the other properties being AC 10 and this being a non-conforming lot, the variance would in fact result in a de facto rezone of the property as single family residential. This property couldn't be used for ag. It's either not large enough or there's enough restrictions with it. It also in some ways might expand a non-conformity. We've got a non-conforming lot with a non-conforming structure. And although these would be essentially conforming, it's a total increase of the use of a non-conforming property. So just some other reasons, to deny the variance. We touched on it a little. There's, they didn't address the mitigation concerns from ecology. I know they, Ms. Berg spoke a little bit to that this morning, but that continues to be an issue, is that Department of Ecology sent follow-up comments in March and the mitigation report still did not actually address those. Based on the diagrams, it was unclear. My client has a 50-foot wellhead protection area. And as far as I can tell, the staff report said there is no building in the wellhead protection area, but unless I'm reading the diagrams wrong, it looks like a portion of the structure would be over their 50-foot, over a 50-foot wellhead protection area. So I guess more clarification is needed on that, because that appears to be a serious a serious issue in the diagram. We also have concerns based on that 2017 prior wetland violation issue. We understand that the county has considered it essentially closed, and this was CE 17-0029 was the code enforcement action. However, I was involved at that time and spoke with Department of Ecology, and they maintained that there would also be a 5-year monitoring period of any rehabilitation that was done. And, admittedly, the applicant said this report doesn't address that. But I have asked the county for records regarding this and just haven't been provided at this time. So I don't know what conversation was in there about the 5 years, but I'm going off what Department of Ecology told me that there would be associated with any mitigation, wetland removal, there'd be a five-year monitoring period. And so this would seem to cut that 5-year monitoring period. And I don't know if that would be then construed as reopening a permit violation or if this is circumventing a prior permit action in violation. So there's still the issue with the, relatively recent code enforcement action on the property that that we think is still unresolved to the extent there may be a monitoring period associated. And then it doesn't make sense to have setbacks if we're just going to start allowing them as a matter of course under notions that it's discretionary. And, again, especially for a situation that the applicant created and came to, we have setback codes for a reason. And if we start avoiding them, what's the purpose of a setback, setback code? These should be very rarely granted. For unique, unusual circumstances, not for income property in agricultural areas. So again, the applicant has the burden of proof to demonstrate that all the criteria have been met. As I mentioned before, I think there's fatal flaws in the mandatory provisions that prevent this variance from being granted. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much for your testimony and argument. Is there anybody else from the public that wishes to testify on this matter? Your attorney's already spoken. Do you want to add some additional facts, I take it? You'll need to unmute yourself. Can you state your name for the record?
Hi, I'm Julie Smania.
And an address for you?
7912 Brinder Canyon Road.
All right, would you raise your right hand for me? Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
Yes.
All right, thank you. And what would you like to tell me about this project?
I want to add a little historic perspective to this project because we initially bought our parcel in 2006 from Jim Willems. And what I wanted to add to it is that this particular piece of land was originally a homestead from the 1800s. There's a lot of historic significance about all the land that's in this canyon. So we paid a good price for it. We subsequently became friends with Bud and Esther Brinder, who had sold it to Jim Willems for just a year. So he subdivided it for residential development. The pear orchards were taken out. And with the subdivision, when we tried to buy it, there was a long delay by the planning department of issuing the correct variances that had been applied for. And the problem is that they were trying to protect us. When we subsequently called the planning department, oops, sorry about that noise in the background. Anyway, they said they were trying to protect us because Mr. Willems had a history of applying for boundary line adjustments, and there was some significant issues going on with that property. Anyway, soon parcels started being sold. The property closed for us. We looked out at the aspen grove, you know, we looked out at the packing shed, and it was beautiful. It was beautiful. We tried to buy it. We approached Jim Willems about why is that not for sale? It's obviously part of the farm. And he said he needed it to store his horse carriages while he was building a new giant property and barn in the back. So a few years later, he listed it with the realtor at what we thought was an exorbitantly high price because we knew its limitations. He knew its limitations. It was obvious it was wetlands, and we'd been told it was wetlands. It never sold, but a series of no trespassing and keep out posters went up throughout the property, and it was no longer a welcoming piece of land that we were looking at. Mr. Willems created, when we bought the land or right before it, a pretty substantial set of covenants. We signed them in 2016, and these covenants were protective covenants, and they were very specific about what kind of building we could build, what kind of, you know, if we wanted to do any expansion or changes, and he was very strict about that. There were some.
So I have to interrupt. Yeah. First of all, I don't have any control over covenants.
Okay.
So it doesn't, I can't enforce them. I can't interpret them. I don't have any authority to do anything with covenants. So
what this speaks to though, thank you. And I'll stop talking about that. But what it says is that there were very strict ideas for that canyon. And what concerned me was that this particular parcel that's being asked for three separate variances in order to build something also has some interesting pieces in the staff report that weren't mentioned earlier by Ryan Walker and you, I think when you were reading some of the oversight. And if you look at, and I'll get right to this, if you look at the page 3 of the staff report under construction phasing and timing, and I quote, construction will begin to come upon issuance of all necessary permits. The historic packing shed will be removed prior to construction. So that's what it says on page 3 of the staff report. So it's contrary to what everyone's just said before that. Another thing is there's no reason to remove that historic shed, by the way, unless you want to put up a modest home that doesn't match the covenants, which is why I brought that up. Sanitation. The on-site septic plan shows a 50 feet wellhead protection when in fact the covenant requires 100 feet. And Mr. Wilms put in a septic system that had to be removed. It was in violation of the code because it was within the 100 feet covenant that he required when we bought the land. So this on page 3, requesting or talking about the sanitation system, it says 50 feet, but the restrictive covenant on every map I have and every map that goes with the property when we bought purchase and sale has 100 foot restrictive covenant around all the wells in the Brendercannon parcels, especially R2 and the one on the packing shed. I'm curious to find out what the well would be for the property of a new residence. It says that there's a well on the property and pictures that are also shown in the Greta Associates package actually is a picture of our well. Our well is in the dead center of that parcel. That's our drinking water well. There used to be a hookup to the, historically to the Brender Canyon farmhouse that went back to an artesian well that no one seems to be talking about right now. So I'm just curious why it's only our well that's being referred to. So I'm wondering if you're thinking of digging a second well or if it's going to be in violation of the 100-foot covenant within our well. So water for that property is suspect. And I think it needs to be a serious consideration. Also, I go back to when in 2016, when Jim Willems sold it to Mr. Jackson. Mr. Jackson had lots of correspondence, and I have copies of it in 2016 and 17 from Angel Hallman, who's the code enforcement manager at the Community Development Office, and Ryan Walker from Greta Associates. When all these violations happened and people were going back and forth trying to figure out how serious the situation was, Ryan even had correspondence, and I have it in my hand, that was with Beverly Murray, who was the significant other of Mr. Jackson, who owned the property. And Jim Willems didn't end up buying this in good faith, or he didn't buy it because he was a good guy. He bought it because, quote, she says, I am going to call my attorney. And she was very angry. I have multiple emails that went back and forth with Ryan Walker and with Marty Mauney, Department of Natural Resources, I think. The same thing, where they were all arguing about the fact that Ryan had not had submitted something that she had paid for, and then this whole thing blew up. So
I have to, this is absolutely irrelevant. When Mr. Okay. Walker was talking about what happened in 2016, quite frankly, that was irrelevant. I've let you go on for a while. What I'm looking for is any facts as to why these variances should or should not be granted and why they do or do not meet the specific criteria.
Okay.
Your attorney addressed those issues.
Okay.
I know you want to vent, but we need to move along. So
page 1 of the wetlands says that this property was currently degraded due to historic human influences. That's not true. That's a very watered down version of saying that, you know, this degradation was due to very specific 2017 human degradations of the wetlands. Bulldozer was brought in without thought of all the wetland problems. The Department of Energy, we haven't seen any mitigation. I haven't seen any planting. The Greta and Associates was very specific about what kind of planting they recommended if they're going to restore the wetlands that were violated. The 5-year mitigation plan does not appear to have taken place. Just natural habitat has grown up slightly. There's just no replanting that's ever taken place. So I'm wondering why that violation was dropped. On page 7 of the staff report, it's significant to note that both the adjacent property owners refused to sign written waivers for these variances when Willems approached us last fall. This is not a hardship case. He purchased this in 2005, knowing full well of the constraints and limitations. He could have added it to a parcel like Julie Norton had said. Any hardship was created by the applicant's own actions. I'm concerned about the drinking water. There's no need, the bottom line is, to develop this highly sensitive parcel. You know, the fact that it has three variances required, just to put a home there that doesn't need to be there. They're talking about tearing down the packing shed just for the sake of profit. This is no reason. He's not going to live there. He has a home in the back of the canyon. So to destroy the packing shed is not necessary. There's agriculture, active agriculture, commercial agriculture going on less than 100 feet away from that property. So that also is a discrepancy with what the report says. And I guess I won't belabor the fact I could go on forever, but I won't. And thank you for listening.
All right. Thank you very much for your time. Is there anybody else who wishes to speak from the public on this matter today?
Yes, sir. Do I have a chance?
Jim Bowen.
Jim Willems.
You're the applicant. We'll come back to you at the end of
okay.
everything.
Thank you.
Anybody else wish to have any testimony from the public? All right, first we'll go back to staff. Is there anything further from staff?
So staff, regarding the packing shed, the removal of the packing shed that I noted in the staff report, I guess, was put in there by error. So if the packing shed is to remain, it would not be allowed to be expanded, remodeled, rebuilt, or anything as a condition of approval. And then also just to clarify, so my staff report just addresses the variances. It does not address the code enforcement issue. To my knowledge, that was resolved in 2019 as per the letter that I included as part of the application material, as part of the staff materials.
All right, thank you very much. Anything else from staff?
Not at this time.
All right, thank you. Now for the applicant, Mr. Walker, anything from you first, or do you want Mr. Willems to talk first?
Jim, you go ahead and I'll finish up.
All right, Mr. Willems, you're still under oath. What would you like to tell me?
Hey, thank you. I think some of the facts need to be just clarified somewhat. To begin with, we bought the two Brender parcels, which are we speak of in these two short-fledged subdivisions. When we bought them, we had no knowledge of anything being other than their orchard land, and I was just buying them because I had the opportunities. Never once did we know about wetlands on them.
Mr. Wilms, when you took the property back in 2017, did you know that there was a wetland on the property? You had to have. There was code enforcement and all
yes,
sorts of problems.
In 2017, yes, sir, I did.
All right. So what happened in 2016, I'm not really worried about, or 15 or 1998.
Okay. So everything done on that property was done with a permit. That's all I got to say.
And there's a well on it.
And there right. is a well on it. There is a well on it. It serves the domestic purpose. And it's been tested by the Schlander Hotel and everything.
So you're saying there's a second well on the property, not
there's
just...
There's a flowing artesian well. And then it's tested and been okayed by the Schland Douglas Hill. I mean, I don't know what more we need to do.
All right. Thank you very much. Now, Mr. Walker, anything further?
Yes. I'm going to address a few of Ms. Norton's comments here to finish up. She made the point that this is not a common right of the neighborhood, and all the neighboring lots are bigger. Well, the neighboring lot immediately to the south, owned by Virgil Gerbig, is 2.6 acres, has a single family residence on it, virtually the same size as this. And that residence, interestingly, is located in the wetland buffer. It's in the buffer of Brender Creek. So we're not asking for anything special here. Now, as noted in the staff report, the lot was created in 1952 by Brinder Road. There was a certificate of exemption, but if you read Chelan County Code 12.14.050, number four, you will read that a certificate of exemption is an optional process to memorialize a lot. However, as soon as the road was there, it was divided by public road. The lot existed in 1952. The point was made that the wetland condition must have been known. Well, it wasn't known until 2017. Prior to that, there were three government officials out there. No one seemed to notice a wetland. You know, not all wetlands are cattails. Some are difficult to be aware of.
Mr. Walker, again, when Mr. Wilms reacquired the property, in 2017, he knew there was a wetland there.
He knew there was a wetland, yes, and the extent of the wetland had not been delineated and a category rating had not been done. It was a wetland is present. In my initial presentation, you know, I explained how wetlands are dynamic, streams are dynamic, and codes are. So until you actually find the boundary and then apply a buffer, which comes from the state rating system, the exact hardship is not known. It's known there's a wetland there. Maybe we can get out of the buffer. Maybe it's only the south side of the property. It's not until we go collect data that we know where that edge of that wetland is. The minimum building area, this is a small building area. It is a challenging lot. We know that. That's why there's three variances. This is the absolute minimum. I don't know that in my entire career I've ever applied for a building size this small. Ms. Norton mentioned you could do other things with the property like storage. Well, without a variance, storage is not allowed in a wetland buffer. Storage is not allowed in a front yard setback. And I suspect if we come back to you and we applied for a wetland variance to allow storage in the buffer, that some of the same people would be here testifying. The commercial agricultural zone, it allows residences. This is not creating a non-conforming use. The surrounding properties are zoned commercial ag. That is an allowable use. We also brought up the wellhead protection area. So wellhead protection areas are for sources of contamination, such as a drain field. They do not restrict building within them. There are many, many examples. I'm sure applications have come before you. You're allowed to build within the wellhead area. It is for protecting from things such as feedlots, livestock, and in particular, drain fields. The drain field on this property is outside of the wellhead protection area. It meets the Chelan Douglas Health District requirements. And finally, as far as the previous violation, it has been resolved by the county. You have the documentation in the file. I'm sure you've read it or will read it. As far as the county is concerned, violation is resolved. If it was not, they would not allow us to be here at this point in an application. And my last point, you heard from Amanda Barge with Fish and Wildlife regarding the proposed mitigation. It is acceptable to WDFW. She spoke for ecology. The mitigation is adequate. It meets the Chelan County Code. It meets the comments from those resource agencies. And without the approval of these variances, there is no reasonable use of this property. And that's all I have today.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
With that, I'm going to close the public record portion of this hearing, and I will have a written decision made within the next 10 working days on this matter. Thank you all very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll turn to the last item on today's agenda. This is a plat application given number P20-003. This is an application to do a cluster subdivision on 129.87 acres into 39 residential lots and three open space tracts, and many other improvements on property located within Chelan County that is more specifically described in the staff report as well as in the application materials. Now, for the record, I will admit into the record that staff report, all those attachments to the staff report, which include all of those application materials, there's site plan drawings, there's the mitigated determination of non-significance, there are comments that have been submitted, noticing documents, the staff report has already indicated. I'm going to admit all those records. Indeed, I'll admit the entire planning staff file into the record by this reference, and turn this matter over to Ms. Strother for the staff presentation.
Thank you. This is an application for a major cluster subdivision of approximately 129.87 acres into 39 lots with three dedicated open space tracts. The subject property is in a rural residential resource five zoning district. Critical areas identified on the property are just potential geohazards for erodible soil. Access to the property would be provided by Navarre Coulee, and a private road would be utilized to access all of the proposed lots. The smallest lot would be proposed the smallest proposed lot would be approximately 0.3 acres, and the largest lot would be proposed at approximately 0.64 acres. Potable water would be provided by a group water system yet to be developed, and all of the lots would utilize on-site septic system. The proposed open space tracts would continue in ag production with ancillary facilities consistent with ag. The applicant proposes to build additional worker housing adjacent to the existing housing structure. On April 1st of this month, I received an email from the agent letting me know that the cultural resource study that was conditioned within my staff report had been completed. Just an FYI, staff has reviewed the application materials, agency comments for consistency, and applicable codes and regulations, and as conditioned, recommends approval.
So, I may have missed it. I certainly do miss it. Things. Looking at the final plat regarding the open space, I assume that the open space is to remain in allowable open space uses in perpetuity. Is that fair to say?
Yes, sir.
So is there a condition of approval where there's a plat note that says this?
Yes.
Okay. I knew I missed it. Where did I miss it at?
It is. It's 13.1.
Thank you very much. All right, thank you. Is the applicant ready to proceed?
Yes, sir. Dan Beardsley here.
All right, and an address for you? Work address or something?
325 32nd Street Northwest, East Wenatchee.
All right, Mr. Beardsley, would you raise your right hand for me? Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
I do.
All right, thank you. Mr. Beardsley, you are here, I assume, as an agent authorized to appear and speak on behalf of the property owner and applicant?
I am.
All right, thank you. What would you like to tell me?
Not a whole lot that isn't covered in the staff report. I think it's pretty well articulated there. It's a property zone RR5. We did the calculations. Cluster subdivisions are allowed. I believe we satisfied all the application requirements and all the substantial requirements for approval. I don't have much to add to that other than answer any questions you might have.
No, I confirm it is going to be a private road through there. That's your understanding as well?
Yes.
And there's no density enhancement that's being requested. You're simply using the density that's allowable in a cluster?
Yeah, the base density of 1.5 multiplier is what we're applying for, but no additional density is required for this approval. We still have like 80-some percent open space. And it will remain an ag.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, sir. Not right now.
Forget if I ask you this. All the proposed conditions of approval, do you have any objection with those?
No. Yeah, I mean, we could parse a few words here and there, but overall, I think they're fine.
All right. Thank you very much. Is there anything else from the applicant?
Nope.
All right, thank you very much. I see one other person present here today identified as Dick. Sir, if you'd like to testify, you need to unmute yourself and identify yourself. All right. The other person present here today has not unmuted themselves. I'm assuming that they do not wish to testify. Is there anything further from staff?
No, sir, other than I will be happy to forward you that email that Dan sent me regarding the cultural resource study.
Okay, thank you. That's part of the staff file of record, so if you could send that to me, that'd be great. All right. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to close the public record portion of this hearing. Mr. Beardsley, I'll have a written decision made for your clients in the next 10 working days. And there are no other items on today's agenda, so I'm now going to adjourn this still April 7, 2021 meeting of the Chelan County Hearing Examiner. And thank you all for coming. This meeting is adjourned.
One thing real quick, Andy.
Yes.
One of the conditions of approval is to provide that cultural resource survey. I guess it really doesn't matter whether it's a condition of approval or not. It's already been done, and there's no reason for concern. So I just thought I'd add that.
What condition is that? Can you have that right in front of you?
I got it here somewhere. There's a bunch of them, so let me point it out for you. Cultural resource survey. Jamie could probably find it faster than I can.
Yeah, don't forget somebody.
It's 7, I believe. 7?
All right.
Yep, there you go. So
is that right?
Just for tidiness sake, it might be good to just eliminate that condition.
Yeah, I don't know. Did they have any? I'll have to read it. I don't know if they have any recommendations within that report, assuming there are none. It would just be deleted. Ms. Strother, yes?
Just for FYI, both Dan and Andy, the cultural resource study is confidential. We are not supposed to read them. They're just supposed to go directly back to the tribe. We're just supposed to get notification from the tribe or the people that do the survey that it's been completed. It's a confidential document, so we're not supposed to receive them at all. They're just supposed to go to whoever is requesting them, and we should be getting some kind of letter or some kind of notification back saying that either the applicant or whomever has completed it.
I routinely receive cultural resource studies and receive them and review them and make conditions related to what the findings are within a cultural resource survey. So if I'm not allowed to see it, then there won't be any conditions related to what may have been in the report.
I'll double check it, but I'm almost positive that we are not supposed to see those at all. But I will definitely double check. And if you'd like, I'll email that to you.
Certainly. I mean, if everybody's supposed to go into this thing blind, the applicant's supposed to construct blind, and the hearing examiner's supposed to issue a decision blind as to what the resource survey revealed, that's one thing. We all know that there was a recent discovery up in the Lake Chelan area. I'm sure it was quite a surprise to a lot of people. But in any event, if it's not going to be provided to me, then I will not be making any conditions of approval related to what's recommended.
I will forward it nonetheless.
All right.
Because we don't know for sure, but I will contact DAC and get the 411.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Beardsley, anything based upon that?
Well, I think what Jamie's talking about is SHPO is very, doesn't want people to know where sites are. And if you remember back, one I can think of in particular was Raven Wing Ranch, where there were some sites in the middle of the project. And so we were told not to disclose them, but we have to protect them. So if they won't tell us where they are, it's kind of hard to protect. So that's sort of the catch 22 you're talking about. But I'm with you. I mean, the hearing examiner has to have the report to know if there's a condition to be attached or simply require the report. And in this case, the report has been done. And there were no concerns raised by the report. So if Jamie's reluctant to send it to you, I'll send it to you.
Dan, I will send it to Andy.
Okay. Either way, it's sort of a moot issue.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for everybody's clarification of that. What I've done is I've closed the public record portion of the hearing. I'll have a written decision made within the next 10 working days. And there are no other items that are on today's agenda. So I'm now going to adjourn this April 7, 2021 meeting of the Chelan County Hearing Examiner. Good to see you again, Mr. Beardsley, and have a nice day.
Thank you. Take care.